Your body is an ultimate high-performance machine, and performance-lab protein is the ultimate high-grade muscle fuel. This revolutionary plant-based formula has conquered the purity and taste issues that you get with most protein powders, and is clinically shown to be at least as effective as whey for increasing lean muscle mass. But again, don't take our word for it. Try it for 30 days, and if you're not blown away with a difference, you'll get your money back. Go to performancelab.com. Use discount code GENIRON10 to get 10% off. That's performancelab.com, discount code GENIRON and number 10.
Welcome to the Generation Iron Podcast, featuring the biggest names in bodybuilding, fitness, combat, and strength sports world.
If you want to be a bodybuilding champion, it takes hours and hours every day of being dedicated and being passionate about it.
How's your boy here, Kyle Green, a.k.a. Mr. Getting It Done?
Yeah, buddy!
Tune in to the GI Exclusives on the Generation Iron Airwaves.
All right, we're back with a new episode of Jab Podcast. This is Vladdy Udin. And today we're going to talk to a huge influencer in the fitness industry. He's also a bodybuilder himself. He's been involved in many big brands, supplement brands in the fitness industry. A lot of his videos have gone viral and generated a ton of views. He doesn't do too many interviews, so it's very excited to be talking to him today. So with that, welcome to the show, Joey Swole. Good to meet you, Joe. Finally, good to meet you, man.
My pleasure, man.
So I wanted to ask you, today in today's fitness industry, you're one of the main influencers. You have a great following. I kind of wanted to learn about your origins. How did you get into the fitness industry, and how did you actually make it to the scene?
Ooh, that's a loaded question, man. First off, it's an absolute pleasure to meet you, and it's an absolute honor to be able to do this with Generation Iron. I've been watching you guys' stuff for a long time, and as I told you before, I'm not big on doing interviews.
No, you barely do any. Like,
no, I've always stayed away simply because I've always found that people always try and create a narrative or, alter things. And I always had this mindset, if I want people to get to know me at a personal level, which I'm always kind of protective of things on a personal level, I do so through my social media, through my platforms, things like that. But obviously seeing the people you've worked with, some of the great people that I trust and I'm good friends with that have said unbelievably great things about you guys. We've been talking for a while, and I'm finally happy we've been able to get together. So how did I get started? Wow, that's a big question. I played football for a long time. I played 16 years of football from age 8 to 24, which always, obviously have to be in the weight room to stay competitive and obviously stay fit, that regimen. As far as bodybuilding, wow. In all truth and honesty, what really kind of triggered my interest when I was about, I want to say 19 years old, I was in my first year of college, and I was the first kid in my family to go away to school. I'm the baby of a very large family, very large Irish-Italian family where cousins are big brothers, aunts are second moms, Chicago, small little city in Chicago, Edison Park, and we're always together. So it's like, there was no immediate family and relative. It was like everyone was just, it was just family. And so being the first one out of, 13 cousins to actually go away to school was pretty tough, man. I got a great academic scholarship to go to a good school, to play football as well. And just wasn't prepared mentally to deal with, certain things about being away from home and away from my family. And I just had a really bad time, got a lot of fights, dealt with a lot of, I don't want to say snobby, bougie type kids that were very rich and very well off, whereas I didn't come from a whole lot of money. Let me rephrase that. You always hear a lot of people say things like, I came from nothing and I made it. And I don't like that because I don't like to correlate not coming from money, meaning not coming from something. I came from a great home. We didn't come from money. We didn't have a lot of money, but I came from a great home of love, family, respect, hard work, and two great parents that taught me and instilled those things in me. So I came from what I like to say, everything I needed to become the man I am today. But anyways, just to reiterate what I was saying, going through a real tough time at school, was trying to come home every weekend without my parents knowing, dropped out all my classes my first semester. And I had a counselor there, academic counselor, William Monroe. To this day, I remember he was a short, skinny South African guy, loved rugby. And he told me one day, he said, And he knew the issues I was having. And I kind of trusted him, and I told him about some of the things that I had been going through, you know, some struggles from my past as well. And he said, I want you to go to the gym tonight, and I want you to train until you're not angry anymore. So I remember that night I went to the gym, and I was there from 6 p.m. till 12 when they closed the gym down. And I remember walking out just feeling this sense of relief. And that was the first time I kind of realized what the gym is my therapy really meant to me. And it really became a way for me to, you know, this outlet for me to kind of get a grasp on my emotions, my feelings, my inner demons, and to just kind of take things out on the weights. And once I finished playing football when I was 23, 24, I picked up an Arnold Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding.
That's very common, yeah.
Yeah, I picked up one of those. I went to my first expo, the Arnold Expo, over in Columbus, Ohio. I went to my first expo. This is actually a great story. I met a guy named Adam Silver. I don't know if you know Adam Silver. He's a fitness model, a fitness agent. He's been in the business a long time, great guy. And I was walking through the expo. He came up to me and said, hey, kid. He's like, you look great. He's like, you ever do any fitness modeling? And I'm like, no, man. You know, I don't really think I'm a pretty boy. I'm like, I've done, you know, I had done Abercrombie & Fitch at one point when I was like 20 years old. One of their quarterlies and their some bags and all that stuff on the wall. That was about 80 pounds ago. And I said, he's like, listen, he's like, here's my card. If you ever get in shape, let me know. And I'm sitting there walking around this expo and I'm seeing, I remember I went to the, you know, you go to the Muscle Tech booth and you'd see all the greats. You had, you know, Dexter Jackson, Melvin Anthony, Jay Cutler, Branch Warren. You know, you had the biggest, best names. And I'm seeing all these guys like, I got a lot of work to do if I even want to make it in this industry. And a couple months went by, decided to do my first show, got in really good shape, or what I thought was good shape. And I found that card he gave me, and I said, sent him an email, hey, Adam, this is, you know, Joey from Chicago. You know, I saw you at the Arnold. Here's some photos of me. Not expecting anything. Like, hey, maybe be like, hey, kid, you look okay. You know, fix this, do that. Maybe, you know, we'll get you some work a couple years from now, or maybe we'll do something. Okay, whatever. 30 minutes go by. I get an email back. Send me a picture of your legs. Okay, I go downstairs and send a picture of my legs. What's your information? Joe says, here's my information. You're flying to LA tomorrow, you're shooting Muscle and Fitness. What? Like, and that, the thing was, that was a trick. Like, my dreams were getting into bodybuilding was to be in a Muscle and Fitness and to win Mr. Illinois, which was a bodybuilding competition. And I did, was able to, I competed in Mr. Illinois. I took, won the novice class, took runner-up in the open, and did Muscle and Fitness, and then a few months later, moved out to LA. I decided to pursue things as far as bodybuilding. One of my first days in the gym, and I tell this story, but he actually tells it better, and he'll take a lot of credit for it. I'm sitting there in Venice Golds, and I'm training, and you know, I'm looking around. You got all the greats in there. This is, you know, 10 years ago when you still had a lot of the top name bodybuilders in there. And I feel a tap on my shoulder, and I'm like, Jay Cutler. Taps me on the shoulder. Hey, kid, where are you from? And I'm like, Jay Cutler, Mr. Olympia, like, oh my God, I'm from Chicago. He's like, you want to do an interview with me? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So we go over, do a quick 10, 15 minute interview, you know, just talking about where I'm from, you know, what I was trying to do with bodybuilding, things like that. And I remember when we got done with that interview, he said to me, he said, hey, you're gonna be somebody in bodybuilding and fitness. So I got a good feeling about you, kid. And I had, you know, guys like him to look up to, you know, to try and emulate. And worked my ass off, and here I am today interviewing with Generation Iron.
Now, were you always business-oriented, like when you, since you were a teenager?
Well, yeah. I will say I always had great work ethic. My parents were very hardworking people. I had very good people in my life, from coaches to teachers to, you know, bosses that were very hard on me, some in my family. My cousin Phil, who was my first boss, we did asphalt, brick, and concrete for 13 summers in a row working for him. And he was very tough on me, which I really appreciate, along with my parents and my teachers and coaches, because that instilled in me a work ethic of, you know, anything I do, whether it was my first job flipping burgers at McDonald's, my job, you know, building streets, doing asphalt, which is so hard, or if it was when I was, you know, working summers overnight cleaning toilets in office buildings just to make enough money to, you know, help my parents out or to help pay for school. I did everything 110%. So, you know, I had an education in college. I had, you know, my degrees were in international business and economics and a minor in Spanish. So I had business, you know, I had some tools as far as my education. But as you know, business has changed, you know, with globalization and obviously social media and marketing over the past 10, 15 years drastically. I've always had hunger. I've always been one of those guys that definitely, you know, goes above and beyond and, like I said, has a great work ethic. So I've been very fortunate to have opportunities where I can, you know, put myself out there, take risks as far as business. And I guess you could say risk, but I guess, you know, anything you're going to work hard at. I mean, people always tell me, you know, you should invest in this. I'm like, my number one investment is myself. You know, I've never wanted to put money in something that isn't something I have direct control of. And that's why if you look at my social media, any company that I post, I either have direct ownership of or equity in or some kind of stake in that's greater than just a paid post. Mm-hmm. So.
What was your secret to building up your social media? Like what do you think was the one thing or multiple things that worked that really changed the trajectory and went up?
It's a great question. I tell kids this all the time. I get that question very often.
From, they come to you and ask you.
Yeah, a lot of young influencers. My number one advice I tell people when building a brand, especially on social media, gaining a following, is it doesn't matter if it's 3 p.m. or 3 a.m. There's always something you could do to better build your brand. A lot of times I'll be doing live chats at 3 in the morning, or I'll be on, you know, online working at 4 a.m. and commenting back to people. I had a conversation with a kid last night. It's probably 2, 3 in the morning. Kid from Louisiana. We literally sat there and talked for 30 minutes about football. Just a kid to DM me out of the blue, and I just had a great conversation with him about Joe Burrow and LSU winning the championship, and about, you know, just other stuff as far as Louisiana. He was telling me about good places to go for Mardi Gras. But you have to be personable. You have to be able to, you know, engage and relate to your followers. I think something that people really can kind of, you know, connect with me on is I'm no better than my followers. I don't put myself on this pedestal. I don't sit here and think that I have a following that makes me any better than anybody. I look at having a following as being a privilege and a blessing. It's my chance to give a good message and to inspire and help better people. I see a lot of young influencers today that try to be something they're not in order to build their social media. For some it works, you know, for some it doesn't. For me personally, I tell people, listen, be yourself, be organic, play to your strengths. If you want to be a fitness influencer, don't think that having a six-pack and big muscles is going to get you there, because there's a million people out there today that look like that. It's very saturated. Find something you're good at and create a tangent off that. If you're a trainer, do something with training. If you're a chef cooking, start a cooking channel associated with fitness. There's so many different applications of fitness that can touch so many different aspects of life that you can create something that gives you your own persona, your own brand that's outside of just being somebody who lifts weights. And then just engaging people, you know, do your research. There's tons of literature out there as far as how to grow your social media, different, you know, whether it's hashtags or things changing with the algorithm or times of the day to post. I mean, there's always different articles being published every day to teach these young kids how to do it. So you just got to take the time to do it. It's like, it's the law of 10,000, right? Anything you put 10,000 hours into, you'll become an expert at. So a simple message behind that is just, you know, put the work in. You know, take the time, read, learn. Knowledge is power, 100%.
I was talking to a very popular influencer in the fitness industry, and he told me he became almost like a prisoner to his Instagram, meaning that because of the likes and comments, he couldn't post for like 3 weeks because he was unsure if the new post would match up to the old post. Do you see that happening to you ever, and do you think it's a problem on social media?
100%. 100%. I recently lost my likes on my page. I'm one of those pages where I can't see my likes anymore unless I actually tap the insights, which was actually a good thing. You definitely, and to me to a degree, but I've seen other influencers I've worked with. I won't name names, but people that worked for me, worked with me, that have sat there writing a caption, editing a photo for 3 hours to post it. That's 3 hours of your life. Think about it. If you do that every day, think about how much time you're losing. But it's definitely, it's a high, right? If you put a post up and you see all of a sudden, oh my God, I got 1,000 likes in 2 minutes. Like, that's a high. That's a good feeling. I mean, it's crazy as a society, we've gotten to a point where people hitting a double tap or a like on a phone is what gives you a sense of security and self-love. I try to stay away from that. I wouldn't say I'm as sensitive to that as a lot of people. But yeah, definitely it plays a role because, you know, especially with the algorithm change and stuff. I mean, 2-3 years ago, I'd put up a video and it'd get 2-3 million views no matter what, as opposed to today. I mean, if you don't post at the right time or you don't get enough engagement within the first however minutes or however it works now, you know, you're going to see a fraction of that. Right. And for me, it's not as much about me feeling appreciated by my followers. I know I have great followers. I know people appreciate me because I see the messages. I've met a lot of people. I've engaged them. I see people every day on the street, at the gym, that say some wonderful things to me. I see all my emails. The thing is, I'm my own team. I don't have assistants. I don't have people that check my stuff. So if you ever get a snap from me or an Instagram from me, or it's me. It's not, you know, which I have nothing against that. If people do that, you know, I know a lot of people do, that's fine. But, you know, it's for me, it's more of a business sense, right? So it's the, you know, if I'm trying to do something to build my company, to make, you know, to convert more, I look at it in the sense of, you know, I got people that work for me. So I have to produce sales in order for them to put food on the table to feed their family. So to see engagement go down because of things like the algorithm change or because they want you to spend money to promote stuff, it's tough. Yeah, it's tough, you know. As much as it plays a role in, you know, yourself inside, it also has, you know, some consequences on that end.
Sure. I remember how I discovered you. It was a couple of years ago. There was a viral video. I think you in a supermarket or something, or some kind of department store playing baseball or something like that. It was a great video. Was that planned, or was it something that, was it strategically planned, or was it like a spontaneous thing that you did?
No. Yeah, that's what we were playing home run derby at the grocery store. That was me and my girlfriend Crystal. So Vons, which is a grocery store out here in California, they're open at like 2 a.m. And, you know, we get late night cravings. Like, hey, let's go get some Oreos, or, you know, we just are just goofballs. And we were just going up and down the aisles and saw the toy aisle. And that's, you know, still one of my favorite aisles. And a lot of times one of my favorite things I ever used to do is, you know, remember those big baskets with the balls in them at the grocery store? I used to dunk on those. Like, that was my thing. I'd always take videos dunking on them. We were just walking up and it was late. There wasn't anybody in the market or anything. I was like, hey, throw me a pitch. I want to hit, you know. And so she threw me a pitch and I just jacked one. I got a lot of hate for that. A lot of people were like, what if you hit somebody? I was like, listen, it's freaking 1:30 in the morning. There's like 3 people in this place. And I'm like, it was a little softball. You're going to be fine. But I remember one of the first times I ever did a video like that. I was dunking on one of those baskets. And when I dunked on it, all the balls came out. Like, they just went everywhere. And the manager walks by and comes over. I'm like, oh, I'm like, can we swear on this? Are we allowed to use profanity? I was like, oh, fuck, you know, and the guy comes by, picks up a ball, looks at me. He turns on, he starts backing me up, like to post me up to dunk on me. It was so funny. But yeah, listen, man, I'm a kid at heart. I always will be a big kid. I'm still the kid that drives past the playground and I'll stop and I want to jump out and, you know, swing or think of it like a gladiator, you know, a little obstacle course. And I'll never want to. I still have a football in my truck. I mean, my girlfriend, we'll go to the movies or we'll go to the grocery store and stuff and I'll stop. And I'll grab the ball out of my truck and we'll go in the parking lot and play catch for 15 minutes. You know, that's me. Yeah, that's me. I'll always be that way.
So how do you deal with the haters online? I mean, I'm sure everybody gets it. You know what I mean? Do you blog them? Do you respond back? Do you ignore them? What's the right rule to handle that?
Ooh. Listen, I guess do as I say, not as I do, I guess would be the right rule for that sometimes. Listen, I'm a hot-blooded Irish Italian. That's my mother's son. And my mother is Mrs., you know, I don't take shit from nobody. So I have that instilled in me. You know, I come from a very tough family in that sense. But at the same time, I've gotten a lot better. A lot of times, this is what I've realized over the years, and I've tried this out. If somebody's saying something negative about you, they're not mad at you. There's something wrong with them. They don't like something about themselves. They're going through something. And I've started to see that over the years. And my initial response, probably 5-6 years ago, was to, you know, bite their head off. You know, I'm going to bite your head off and I'm going to say something back and make you feel stupid. But as I've gotten older, I've started to realize that that's kind of like a call for help, you know. And a lot of times, whether it's on Snapchat or Instagram, I'll DM that person. Hey, man, like, I know you're not mad at me. You don't know me. You've never met me. You know nothing about my heart, my character, my integrity. What's wrong? And then a lot of times, they're like, hey, man, you know, you're right. I'm just going through a hard time. And I've had some good conversations with people like that. I've created friends that way. No joke. People that I still connect with on social media.
It took you and then...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think about it. I was raised, if you have nothing nice to say, shut the fuck up. That's what my mom taught me. Right? You agree? you know, that's what my mother taught me, and I've, you know, used that throughout my life. I'll never go out of my way to hate on somebody, and I truly believe that is a horrible cancer of social media, unfortunately, because it could be such a great tool. Unfortunately, it comes with things like that. You have to develop a very, very tough mindset, because I don't care how successful you are, how many followers you have, you're always going to see that, and it's going to tear at people. It's going to affect them some way. I don't care how tough you are. It always has an effect on people. You just have to kind of be better than that and kind of realize that, you know what, if you weren't successful, you weren't doing something right, then you wouldn't have that. And at the same time, like I said, 99.9% of the time, those people that are saying those things about you, they're mad about themselves. They're unhappy about something within themselves. And, you know, if you take a second and maybe show a little bit of empathy, you know, maybe you'll help that person out. Which, I mean, maybe that's the Catholic in me, I don't know. Maybe that's me trying to be Jesus or trying to emulate Jesus, you know, and what I was taught as a Catholic school kid. But I'm not going to lie. Like, there's times where, you get upset and you get offended. I went through a period when I was, you know, with Shreds and we got all that hate. Somebody that was, you know, one of those pages, I won't name names, that was posting a lot of hate about us, posted my phone number.
For those who don't know, you're a part of that company, right?
Yeah, I was, and we could touch on that in a second, but to kind of go back to what we were saying, you know, at the time, my mom was fighting cancer. She still is. She's going on her fifth year. They posted a picture of me and my mom before she went into surgery to have her lung removed for cancer. And they said, "Too bad Shreds doesn't cure cancer." At which I lost it, of course. That's my mom. Like, I'll kill you. I'll end your life for my mom. But they posted my number and I was getting calls every day and texts. I had kids calling me saying, "I'm going to piss on your mom's grave," or, you know, "I can't wait for your mom to die." Yeah, it was bad, man. Like, death threats. I mean, I have my old phone, which is from a few years ago, from when I never changed my number too. I kept it. I was like, I'm not getting rid of this number. I've had this for 10 years. But I went through, that was tough, man. That was for a few months. I had people calling me, texting me all day long. And I work for my phone. So I'm sitting there trying to work and make money to feed my family. And I'm dealing with people, you know, calling and saying these things. And they said, think of the worst thing you could possibly think of. And these are people that are calling me and saying this to me. And I'm just like, and I had to deal with that.
I wanted to ask you about, you say you mentioned you don't do a lot of interviews for that reason, right? Negativity. Mm-hmm. Do you think in today's world, right, when you run a media company, as a media company, it's almost like negativity drives views, clicks. Doesn't matter if you're a fitness media company or CNN, you know what I'm saying? Like, the headline, you know, Joey Swole donates to charity, will not get nowhere as amount of clicks as Joey Swole involved in something crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I think drama attracts attention and things that people want. I mean, everybody kind of, there's a lot of people out there that want to see the world burn, so to say. But I mean, it's not necessarily the negativity that I don't do interviews. I like to keep it very close knit. You know, when it comes to the fitness industry, I like to kind of keep things kind of at arm's length in a certain sense, especially when it comes to my personal life, because of things like, you know, what's happened with my mom, and because of people that want to take things and take your personal space and use that against you and attack you with it, which is, it doesn't matter who you are. That's your weakness. Your weakness is always going to be something that you're very passionate and you love, like your family or your personal life. On top of the fact that I've always felt that, like I said, a lot of people try to control the narrative. And I've always thought that, you know, I have my platforms. I can use that to tell my story or to do my own kind of interviews. Or I've always said, you know, and this is something I really stress, is that, you know, I'm kind of the anti-influencer in the sense that I don't like the fact that there's a lot of influencers out there today that think their shit don't stink because they got followers. Like, listen, kid, I don't give a fuck how many followers you got or how many muscles you have. What I care about is how you treat people. I always say, I don't care how much you bench today. I care if you held the door for the person walking in behind you. That's what's important to me. And I think there's too many people out there today that kind of get this ego, and this is all part of society with this, you know, social media phenomenon, that think, oh, I have, you know, 50,000 followers. I have 100,000, 5 million. I'm better than you. It's like, you're not better than people. So in a sense, I've always tried to stay away from the things that kind of put me in that light as being like this famous person, because I hate, first off, fame isn't real. I hate that word. I hate when people say you're insta-famous. I can't stand that. I'm a regular person that's very hardworking, has a passion for what he does, and loves to inspire people. And I've been very blessed to be able to do what I have, given the platforms I have, and help, you know, try to change people's lives and give my 2 cents and give back what was given to me. And that's me in a nutshell. And I've never tried to be above that. And that's hurt me, because I've lost a lot of opportunity, because there's a lot of people out there, influencer-wise, that have made money doing things that have put them on that pedestal or put them in that light as being famous, and kind of gone to that level, that I've stayed away from, simply because that's never been my goal. I didn't create an Instagram to be like, I want to be famous one day and I want to have millions of followers so I can do this. I simply was like, oh, another platform that maybe I can, You know, I always say, if you know, it doesn't matter if you have a million followers or one follower. If you can change one person's life or inspire one person a day, you're an inspiration. And I'll keep that mentality. I'm not, the people that knew me 10 years ago, before social media, that know me today, I'm the same person. Maybe a little bigger, a couple more pounds, maybe a little fatter in some ways. But if social media ended tomorrow, I'd go back, get a different job or do something else, and I'd be okay. I'd still be me.
So most people, when they think of Joey Swall, right, they think of a fitness entrepreneur. You associated with many different companies over the last few years. Mm-hmm. At what point did you make a decision to go that route as opposed to competing and kind of going through the ranks of climbing the ranks of bodybuilding?
Oh, wow. Great question. First, I'll say and to any influencer out there, and I stress this, you know, a lot, is you have to respect the stage. You know, I started out competing. The people that created the foundation for the sport are competitors. A lot of times you see influencers like, oh, I don't need to compete. You know, competing is stupid. Like, anybody that competes has my utmost respect, love, and that, like I said, from the very first, day I loved bodybuilding, I wanted to compete. And I still might compete again someday. It's just, you know, when I did a few shows, I did well, I kind of saw some of the politics of it. They didn't really deter me in a sense, although it does for a lot of people. It was more the sense that I know you're not going to become financially successful competing. It's like the top 1%. Like, if you have to be at the top of the top. And to be honest, the drug protocols it takes to get there, along with the very small percentage of people that actually get there, as well as the talent and the tools that I had for other things that I wanted to do with my life, that just didn't gel. And then, you know, back in 2011, 2012, I did my last show in 2011. 2012, we started Shreds, and that took off along with the other companies we had. And as I tell people today, to compete, you have to be very selfish, rightly so. You know, for me to do a show, it's not, hey, I kind of feel like I look good, I'm going to take, you know, the next 6 weeks and do a show. If I'm going to do a show, I'm going to take 12 months, I'm going to prepare right, I'm going to do everything the right way, and I'm going to step on stage and fucking embarrass everybody. I'm not stepping on stage just to do a show, I'm stepping on stage to destroy everybody. That's my mentality. I'm a competitor. From football to baseball to any sport I've ever participated in, I compete to win. I'm not saying I'm a sore loser, but I hate losing. Not in a sense that, oh, you know, I should have won, it was his, no. If I lose, I take accountability for that. But I don't do anything in life to lose. So for me to give that type of dedication and energy and effort to competing would take away from the ventures I had going on as far as business. And you have to realize, when there's people that depend on you to put food on the table, for you to take that and say, I'd rather be selfish and compete when I could be working harder to provide more for the people I love or the people that work for me, it's kind of a no-brainer. It's like, yeah, I'm going to, you know, do what I have to at this point, because the competing is always there. I mean, there's guys that compete into their 50s, and I could absolutely do it again, especially since the goal of being Mr. Olympia was never on my plate. You know, I respect that, and like I said, I have love for all the guys. I'm good friends with all the guys that compete. I'm still good friends with Dexter, Jay, you know, Phil. Those guys are very good friends. And, you know, some of the top guys, Brandon Curry, who I've known for years. I love those guys. I respect them. That's what they chose to do, and they do it, and they've made a great career out of it. That wasn't in store for me. So I took my talent and my tools and what I was great at, and my hustle and hard work, and I put it towards business.
But it's interesting, because right now in the fitness industry, guys like you, Bradley Martin, you know, Colin Van Morga, and many other influencers, it's inevitable, you know, it's obvious that the spotlight is on you guys.
Which is unfortunate, in my opinion. You know, I always say that. It's like, I look at a girl, and no offense, I don't judge anybody, but, you know, you look at a girl that posts her butt, you know, and everything related around her glutes and her butt and butt workouts and like that, and she's recognized as being a fitness influencer, somebody that's more involved in the fitness industry than a Mrs. Olympia, you know, or a female that's been competing for, you know, 10, 15's busting her ass, that lives that sacrifice, live that lifestyle, as well as men, right? I mean, most of the big names in bodybuilding and fitness today, with the largest followings, that are doing the best, that are the, you know, most lucrative, are people that don't compete. Unfortunately, you know, that's a couple things. That's one, the effort they've put in. I'm not taking away from those people. I'm one of those people. It's, you know, the effort that I've put in, and those people as well. And the sense that, you know, people, I mean, in all honesty, the general public is going to relate more to somebody that lives a very active, fit lifestyle as opposed to somebody that competes, right? They're going to look at the competitors more as like, oh man, that's really cool. I don't want to look like that, but that's awesome, right? Whereas the, you know, the people that are on more level of like a, you know, a Callum or, you know, some of these, you know, OG guys that have been around forever, you know, that's more relatable to them. So I guess that maybe they can connect better. I'm not exactly sure, but, you know, at the end of the day, the one thing I will say, and I say this all the time, is you have to respect the competitors. Those are the guys that, you know, like they set the stage for the sport. They deserve all the love. And I'll always give it to them. And I'll never, like I said, I've seen so many young kids that sit there and try and badmouth competing and badmouth the stage. And I've seen so much drama and beef. It's like, listen, kid, if Arnold never stepped on stage, you'd never be here. You know, if those guys like Reeves and Arnold and, you know, those classic guys in the 60s and 70s, if those guys didn't do what they did, even through the 80s and 90s, there'd be no platform for you to have today. So you have to be thankful.
So you ever wondered why your pee looks bright yellow when you take a multivitamin? Well, basically it's because most companies use synthetic vitamins that flush straight through your system and straight down the toilet. Performance Lab Multi is different though. All nutrients are lab grown and nature identical for maximum absorption and potency, delivering an instant nutrition upgrade in one daily hit. But don't take our word for it. If you don't see the difference in 30 days after use, you'll get your money back. So go to performancelab.com, use discount code GENIRON10 to get 10% off. That's performancelab.com, discount code GENIRON, and number 10. So can you tell me about the story of Shred's company? I remember at some point we were at the expo, like maybe 4 years ago, and it was literally had the biggest booth. It was the biggest presence. I think it was either Arnold or Olympia Expo, maybe both Olympia. Probably. And it was huge.
It was the 50th anniversary of the Olympia. We had the biggest booth in Olympia history, spent $1 million. $1 million. Yeah, I had a 60-foot wall.
And you were a partner in that company, right?
Yeah, I was. I helped start the company. It was me. I was a bunch of people that were, you know, big factors in. But the original kind of three people were me, Arvin, and Anker, who to this day, again, are still, you know, very good friends of mine. But yeah, it was like a 4-hour wait to get through. Just like I still tell people, like I wouldn't wait 15 minutes to meet me. Like you're waiting 4 hours. I mean, that line was just, it was crazy, man. We had all the best, you know, all the biggest names in fitness at that time. And I remember, and like I said, that I don't like to do that stuff. Like, I think it's not because, and I'm not trying to say that arrogantly. It's just that for somebody to wait 4 hours, come on stage, take a 2-second picture with you, and then have security be like, all right, guys, move it along. Like, I like to connect with the people. Like, I always say, and this is the reason I don't do a lot of expos anymore and I don't do that kind of stuff. It's because if I'm going to meet somebody, I want it to be in an environment where I can give them an actual personable connection. Like at the gym, if I meet somebody at the gym, they want to take a photo, they want to talk, or simply I'll say, hey, you want to take a photo with me? You got to earn it. Hit a set with me. I'll make them get down and do a set. That type of stuff, I think, leaves a good lasting impression as well as true to myself and my character as who I am. As opposed to, you know, standing on stage, you know, looking down at people in a sense of, oh, you know, you guys are waiting to take a picture of me, I feel cool. Like that's not me. It was a great experience. I remember they closed the expo down and there were still a good 50 to 100 people in line and the lights shut off and everybody left from Shreds and I stayed. And I made sure, I stayed there for like an extra hour and a half and I made sure every single person that waited in line got a hug, a photo, whatever they wanted, an autograph, you know, whatever we had to do. It was pretty cool, but that was a good time, man, that expo. That whole Olympia was a great time, man. We did a lot of great things for people.
And what happened with the Shreds? And you left that company to start a new company? Whatever happened with them?
Yeah, I left August 2017. I left Shreds to, I partnered up with a couple, my buddy Nick and a couple of the guys, and we started a company called Rise Supplements. We're about 2 years old now, doing very well. Looking to have a great 2020. It was just the right time. What I wanted to achieve and where I saw my career going, it was time to move on from Shreds. I was there for, you know, 6 years, you know, from the very beginning. And like I said, till this day, great friends with Arvin, great friends with everybody there. Still talk to them, still wish great things for them. I know they're still around, they're still doing well. Have a lot of respect and a lot of admiration for the people there that you know, were able to give me the, you know, the chance to become Joey Swole in a sense. So,
was it unfair what happened to that company? Was there a lot of scandal around it going on? Was it?
I still don't understand the word scandal. I mean, a lot of people say things like scam and scandal and stuff like that, but it really wasn't. It was a combination of things happening at the right. It was one. It was, you know, a lot of people ganged up as far as, you know, people that were hating, you know, on certain pages that had decent followings, certain athletes that were, you know, pushing it to have pages do things that were either, you know, just mad that we were successful or what. It was having some discourse between some of our athletes and other people outside the company. But, you know, the actions of certain people didn't reflect the company. There was a supplement company. Our manufacturer was manufacturing some of the top supplement companies. That's something consumers don't understand. Like, if you look at a company and you think they have bad quality products, look at the manufacturer. Because chances are that manufacturer manufactures 5, 6, 7 other companies that you might think is a great quality company, right? So, you know, our products weren't bad. We had, I mean, our burner was great. I liked it. Our BCAAs were great. We didn't really have a pre-workout. Our protein was delicious, and, you know, we did a lot of R&D and innovation, but our strength was our marketing. That was it. You know, we were the first people to really create influencer marketing and social media marketing and run with it. And of every other company, even companies that were hating on us, were mimicking what we were doing and using the same type of marketing schemes to create revenue. But like I said, yeah, it was a combination of some hate. The algorithm changed. You know, it burnt out, you know, burnt out in a sense. You know, we literally went from, I think our first year was under 6 figures to doing 6, 7, 8, 9. I mean, that's a large jump over a short amount of time. And we were in Forbes in our second year. Arvin had an article in Forbes about us, about how we, you know, how fast we grew and how successful we became. And again, I tell people from this day, this all started, no joke. I was sitting there one day, and we, you know, it was so funny because Arvin and I, we would hustle, man. We were hustling the Arvin Acker every day, trying to sell as many bottles. We had one burner, we had a fat burner. And we were trying to sell and sell and sell. And no, man, I don't know who you guys are. We go to stores, hey, you know, you want to pick it? No, who the hell are you guys? You know. And one day I had just started an Instagram. I had a couple thousand followers. I had a decent following on Facebook, nothing huge. I took a picture of our fat burner. And I put it on my Instagram, and it said right below it, it said, kick me for more info. Remember Kick Messenger? I remember Kick Messenger. It said, kick me for more info. And all of a sudden, you know, going from doing 5 bottles a day, it was 10 bottles a day. And people would message me, and, you know, it was all of a sudden 20 bottles a day. And I'm like, you know, we should bring on more athletes to do this. And I, you know, brought on people like Paige and Devin and Ainsley and Colin and, you know, great team of people. And all of a sudden, hey, guys, this is what you do to, you know, to make money. And we paid our athletes well. That was the reason a lot of companies didn't like us, because they're sitting there handing out $500, you know, free supplements, and we're sitting there paying our athletes to the point where they're all making 6 figures at one point. And they didn't like that because that was new. Like, nobody, you don't pay, you know, fitness athletes. They get free supplements and maybe a small contract. It's like, no, man, you're going to use somebody's image, you're going to make money off them, you should pay them. So we kind of changed the game in that sense. And a lot of these influencers today, whether you like Shreds or not, we set that stage for you to get paid. You know, that we were the first company to pay athletes and pay athletes well. And you can't argue against that. That's as true as the sky is blue. But yeah, man, it was a fun ride, man. Like I said, I miss it. And I really hope one day, and I was saying this earlier, like they should do a documentary, or somebody should do a documentary on the kind of the rise and the not the fall, I shouldn't say the fall, but just the rise of how we did everything and you know the difficulties we went through, and then obviously at the end. I mean, nobody really knows the true story about what happened at the end and why things went the way they did. Everyone has their own guesses and rumors, obviously, you know, get spread and things like that. But it wasn't that. I mean, there was no hate. There was no animosity towards everybody. People just went their own ways. You know, you think about it, you take a bunch of young kids, 23, 24 years old, not making any money. I won't name names, but some of our athletes were sleeping in their cars at one point. Some were sleeping on floors, making $30, $40 a night as a barback, to making 6 figures in 1 year. And then all of a sudden they got, you know, fancy cars and these endorsements and living in penthouses, and they're, you know, getting millions of followers. You take somebody and go from here to there at 23 years old, chances are you're gonna create a little bit of an ego, and things are gonna kind of spiral out of control. Personally for me, and I tried to stress this to everybody, I said, you know, always stay level-headed, you know, be humble, save your money, you know, be smart. I think the reason I was able to survive and I've been around this long, you know, these number of years, because I've never changed who I am. I've never tried to be something I'm not, and I've always stayed humble and you know, and stayed true to myself.
Now, when you launched Arise Supplements, I remember you launched a campaign with Conor McGregor, I think it was.
Yeah,
You signed him at the peak of his career. It was like the biggest name in MMA.
I still think he's pretty big. I mean, he's getting paid.
He's huge. How were you able to do that? I mean, I'm sure a lot of supplement companies were probably bidding for him at the time.
I don't know where the companies were in line, but somebody made a connection for us to his management, and we just had some negotiations, and we went out to Vegas to train with him and hang with him and things like that. And he's a great guy, man. He's very down to earth. Liked us, liked our products, and just created a good relationship. And then he's been out of the loop for a while. You know, he had to go and kind of refocus on himself and fix his image. Yeah, I mean, it definitely put us on the map. I definitely remember when we announced it. I had I'm friends with a lot of supplement company owners, like Andy Frisella, great guy. I love, Jason, over at Steel, one of my, like a brother to me. And I remember when we did that, I was getting text messages. I'm like, how the f*** did you do that? And I'm just like, come on, man, you gotta have a little faith in me. But it wasn't as much, I had a great team, man. The guys I have at Rise, my business partner, Nick, and the whole team we have there. It was a true testament to, hard work, our products, our formulation, our manufacture, everything. We have a lot of great things going on in 2020. We just brought on a partner that's, we'll make an announcement soon, but we have some really great things in the works, and we're really doing some great things as a company. A lot of people don't realize how hard it is to start a supplement company. Everybody and their mother and sister and, third cousin has a f***ing supplement company today. And it's not easy. It's not easy. People don't understand how much work goes into, whether it's product formulation, the margins, the trying to become profitable. Like, they don't really. I remember Andy Frisella didn't make, I think, I might be wrong, and Andy, I'm sorry if I'm wrong, man, but I'm pretty sure you said he didn't make seven figures until his 10th year in the business. And he kept going, man. And now, look at First Form, that's one of the best in the game. I mean, he's done things right, and that guy is just killing it. Along with people like, Jason over at Steel and Dan and those guys. But it is not easy, man. It takes a lot of hard work, a lot of patience. It's not an overnight success. And even with Shreds, man, our first year at Shreds, we did like $72,000 or more. And we were like, God, we're going to just crash and burn.
But you didn't give up.
No, you don't. I mean, that's the thing. Like, work ethic is work ethic. That's why I said, like, the best thing you can invest in is yourself, so.
Now, you're part of the company called Ignite with Dan Bilzerian, right? Mm-hmm. Tell me about that company and how this partnership came together with him.
I've been good friends with Dan, for a long time. And my dogs are crazy. So, we met a number of years ago. The first time I met was at the dentist's office. And I remember seeing him. And Dan loves bodybuilding. He's somebody that's very interested in all aspects of bodybuilding. I'll just leave it at that from top to bottom. And, we had a quick chat, and I said, hey, man, we should train sometime. He said, yeah, absolutely. I didn't see him for a while. I went to his birthday party at Warwick here in L.A. With, my buddy Camille brought me, my buddy Jay over at Liverage Media. And we went. I remember, and I'm sitting there, and he's friends with, you got Chris Brown there, and, T-Pain, and, G-Eazy, and, like, all these, Machine Gun Kelly, and Beckham, and, all these big celebrities. And I'm just me. And he's, talking to me. And we had a little after party, and like I said, this is about 3-4 years ago now. And I remember we go, and there's an elevator that goes up to like this penthouse, and there's like 100 people in the lobby waiting to get on this elevator to go up. And he came out, and he looked at me. He said, "Joey, you're good. Everybody go home." And he brought like 2 people out of like the 100, and let us come up. And I remember we sat there in the kitchen just eating and talking bodybuilding and stuff for like a good 3 hours that night. And I remember like I left, and my buddy Jay texted me and said, "I want you to know, Dan doesn't like anybody. He rarely connects with people, and he's very, very guarded in the sense of who he lets kind of in his circle." And he's like, he really liked you. And I remember he called me that next week. "Hey, come out to Vegas, let's train." And I did. He spent a week out there. We trained and just kicked it, and we've been good friends ever since. And then obviously when he started Ignite, I wanted to be on board with that and help him with the influencer side and things like that. And some other projects that he's working on as well. The thing was, we always wanted to work together on something. Whether it was, doing a supplement company, I was the one that connected him with Jason. And now he works, with Jason over at Steel. We had interest in me going over there and working with them for a while, which I would have loved to. Like I said, those two guys are like brothers to me. Unfortunately, it didn't work out, but it's all good. And we've always wanted to partner on some stuff, and We still have more, you know, business ventures in mind in the future. But he's just a hardworking guy, man. He's the type of guy that you always want to have some type of, you know, aspect in a sense that you want to create wealth with him, man. I mean, the guy is just a hustler, man. The guy just works. He's always thinking money, man. The guy's always doing something. Very good businessman. He's very focused. I got to tell you though, and this is probably the number one question I get asked all the time: Is his life really like that? And I say, what you see is what you get, man. Everything you see on his social media is as transparent and as real as he is, man. He does nothing for the gram. He does it for himself, and it just gets put on the gram. That's his lifestyle. But you know, I mean, me and him have some of the greatest conversations at 3 a.m. I mean, he's another guy. Doesn't sleep. Stays up. You know, he's hungry to make money. He's, you know, wants to be one of the most successful people in the cannabis industry, and he's going to be.
Is it very competitive, the cannabis industry right now? Because it seems like there's a lot of big players, and
pharmaceutical
companies want to take over as well.
Well, you know, now that it's obviously become illegal in more and more places, especially with, you know, regulations starting to kind of drop, and that's the one thing, man. I mean, the amount of regulations, for, you know, from a federal level are very tough. But you know, internationally, you know, things like that. I mean, everybody's starting a CBD company. I mean, I can't even tell you how many CBD companies I see popping up on social media, as well as, you know, everyone's going to get into, you know, to weed. I mean, that's just what's going to just overtake the market, and there's a lot of money. I mean, there's people that have been doing it for years now. I mean, that's the one thing. It's really become prevalent the past couple of years. But there's been people where, you know, this has been legal now for a number of years in other states, places like Colorado and. I remember I had a buddy, a buddy of mine from Miami that had his own grow in Colorado, and he told me, he's like, hey man, and this is probably 2013. He's like, hey man, you should invest. I'm doing, you know, I'm starting a company, I'm doing a grow, and I'm like, but if I don't know something about the, like, I didn't know anything about the industry at that point. And if I want to put money into something, I want to have direct control. I want to be able to, whether it's put a post up or do some back end sales or maybe some customer service. You know, I want to do something to make the company worth something, and I didn't have any. You know, insight into it. And I remember his first grow, he made like fucking $5 million. He's like, you could have invested, man. I was like, I was very happy for him.
I heard somebody from the industry that a lot of bodybuilders actually use cannabis, you know, smoke weed.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, actually positive. It's a good thing. Like, it's not bad.
My personal belief is this: you do what you want to do with your body. Nobody can tell you what to do. Whether it's smoke weed, whether it's, you know, take steroids, whether it's eat McDonald's every day, you know, whatever you want to do, you do. That's you. Nobody can ever tell you how to live your life, period. Now, from a sense of what's healthy, what's not healthy, I tell people, do your research, do your homework, be smart about things. For me personally, I never smoked weed. The first time I ever smoked weed was last year with Dan and Steve Aoki. And Steve Aoki's, you know, in-house studio, listening to music and making music, which is one of the coolest experiences ever. Didn't get really high from it, got really hungry. And we went out to eat after, and I just ate my weight and whatever, you know, we had in front of us. But, you know, as far as, you know, things like anxiety, I get a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress from work and things like that. Definitely helps with that. Helps me sleep, helps me relax. I'm not a big smoker. I don't smoke every day. I smoke a couple times here and there, like I said, when my stress gets really bad or you know, I really need to kind of calm down and relax. Or when I've had a really heavy workout and I'm just like really like, and I just kind of need to cool off. But there's a lot of people out there that obviously like to smoke pre-workout, smoke post-workout.
During workout?
No, tell you the truth. Right. There's people out there that swear, they smoke like some sativa pre-workout, and they're just like, it's the greatest, like, the mind-muscle connection, the pump, the energy, like they're just so focused on their training. Me personally, when I get high, and most people say like they get real tired and they want to sleep, I'm focused, man. Like I'm like, if you get me high, like I'm gonna work for 6 hours straight and make money. Like it's crazy. I'm like completely opposite of people. And my friends all think I'm nuts. Or I'm really funny. Like usually I'll get like we'll have like game nights here and we'll like play games like Scattergories and you know, those, you know, cardio games with like friends. Yeah, and I'll get high and I'll just be the funniest motherfucker there is, and people are like, man, I wish you were smoking 10 years ago. And I was like, whatever.
So tell me about the new venture that you're launching, which is the seasonings, right?
Yes. Sauces. Low calorie sauces. Yeah. A company called Taste. Taste flavor company. Me and a couple people that I work with already, we spent about a year in the works. It's a low calorie sauce company, 10 calorie sauce company called Taste. Basically, you know, I wanted to get in the food and beverage industry. Like I said, to be successful in fitness, there's so many different aspects of life that you can create some type of revenue stream in. So trying to think outside the box. You know, everybody's doing apparel, everybody's doing supplements, everybody's doing CBD, everybody's doing, like, there's all these markets becoming saturated. You know, I was around for the Flavor God days. I was one of the first people to help do Flavor God back when, you know, we launched some of the marketing for them and did some things for them back in, you know, the Shreds days. Always, you know, was an influencer and, you know, somebody that was a big pusher of Flavor God. So I always wanted to do something along those lines. So sauces, you know, we came up with the idea. I found a great formulator, somebody to work with, you know, the recipe and things like that. Went back to the drawing board probably 6 or 7 times to get it just right. And, came out great, man. You know, we have 4 sauces. We're gonna launch 3 here in the next, you know, couple weeks, along with some other SKUs and stuff like that, which we're gonna put on the back burner to kind of release progressively, you know, quarter to quarter, you know, to scale it the right way. But they're phenomenal, and everyone from, you know, Dan to, you know, people like, I guess I can't really say names, but there's some pretty big names that we've had that are ready to jump on board that are just blown away by the sauces. And I think that's a very untapped industry that's related to fitness that people haven't touched on. And the thing is, everybody wants to have better tasting food, you know. And one of the things I preach is, you know, dieting doesn't have to suck. Whether you're a client of mine, you're a guest of mine in my home, or, you know, you're just somebody I'm talking to and shooting the shit with, like, I will tell you, like, my diet, like, I stay pretty lean year round because I eat good, healthy food most of the time. I mean, I cheat and stuff like that, epically. But, you know, I eat good, healthy, quality food that's clean, that tastes great. One, because I've been doing this so long, because I know how to, obviously, whether it's seasoning my food, cooking my food, knowing what, you know, nutrient-dense macros are, acceptable into a diet to keep me the way I want to look. And the thing is, people don't know that. People think, oh, I got to eat chicken and vegetables, or chicken and rice, or, you know, it's crazy. Like, one of the things, like, doing, like, online coaching, I get so many people that come to me, and I'm like, oh, this coach I had me eating chicken and vegetables, you know, 6 times a day, and I hate chicken. It's like, first off, if somebody doesn't like fucking chicken, why are you making them eat that 6 times a day when there's numerous other sources of protein? So, basically, you know, everybody wants their food to taste great, and we're just going to kind of put a product out there and you know, let the people speak for themselves, and I think it's going to do well. I'm very, very excited. Good luck with it, man. Thank you very much.
So what do you think is the biggest misconception about you that people think?
Well, there's a few. One is that I'm 5'2". I think that's one of the number one things people, when I meet people at the gym, I'm telling you, and I can't tell you if I had a dollar for every time, is that people always say, you know, you're much bigger in person. And I'm like, people always think if you're a bodybuilder and you're wide, you're short. You know, I'm 5'9", and you guys can stand next to me and see. I'm not, you know, my girlfriend's 5'4", and I'm 5 inches to 6 inches taller than her. But I mean, that's just a physical thing. But I think that's probably one of the coolest things is, you know, a lot of people look big on social media, but you see them in person, they're not as impressive, but people always see me like, oh, you look bigger. And I'm always like, yeah, that's always great. I mean, I always have a good pump when they see me, but, misconception, you know, I think kind of the general, people think that when you're into bodybuilding, that you're, you know, you're not obviously educated or you're not, you know, in tune with things like, yeah, you're not, you know, somebody that has something outside of just being a bodybuilder for, you know, an income stream. You know, I work really hard, man. I tell people, I said, you know, I pay for my gym memberships. When I go to the gym, that's my time. I don't make money to lift weights. Yeah, sure, looking great helps with my business and my brand, but I gotta work and hustle to make my money. You know, nobody pays you to go lift weights, or at least not me. So when I explain that to people, and, you know, obviously they get insight into my life, or we simply have a 5-minute conversation. They're always, tell you the truth, one of the most common things I get after speaking to somebody for a few minutes is, oh man, I had the complete wrong idea about you. Like, I thought you were this, this, and this, but you're actually a nice, well-spoken, humble guy. And I'm like, okay, thanks for admitting that.
So I want to ask you a couple of questions about the sport of bodybuilding.
Sure.
You follow it, obviously, you can talk about it. So why do you think bodybuilding is not becoming a mainstream sport? What's preventing it from becoming mainstream?
A mainstream sport, like, you mean as far as like
football?
Oh, football's things like baseball is America's pastime. Football, I think it's one, not as many people can do bodybuilding. A lot of people can go to the gym, but you're never going to have a dense population of people that actually want to become bodybuilders. But you're always going to see, obviously, from a young age, people that want to be baseball players or get enrolled in Little League or Pop Warner football or hockey, wrestling, things like that. Or today, you know, you see a lot of the kids young that are starting to get into, you know, mixed martial arts. Bodybuilding is something I think people kind of get into later in life. I personally, for myself, I didn't start bodybuilding until I was 23, 24 years old. It's when I first started really trying to bodybuild. I think that's one thing. I think there's, I mean, obviously the drug, you know, the drug use, you know, things. To become a successful bodybuilder at the level of the Olympia stage, you have to, you know, do what you have to get there, which is a drug protocol. I think a lot of people have misconceptions about that. And I think, you know, a lot of factors play into that. It's not, you know, you put on ESPN, you're going to see, you know, Ronnie Coleman or Phil Heath or Brandon Currie or Jay Cutler on ESPN. No. Or Kai Greene. Not often. You might see him once in a while. I think with the emergence of people like The Rock today, and obviously his bodybuilding being a part of, you're such a large part of his career, and people really, I mean, looking up to him and him having the following he's had. I think the great ambassadors for the sport that we've had, like Jay Cutler, like Kai Greene, who is worldwide known and loved, you know, people like the Callum, you know, Von Mogers and the Bradley Martins and, you know, those guys that have that, you know, background. I think that's opened up a lot more, and I think you're going to see more people that have an admiration for that. Now, the people that actually take that step to become bodybuilders, not so many. But the thing is, you know, today, like I said, there's always going to be a large population of people that want to look better. That's always going to be, you know, prevalent in society. But yeah, I mean, and I try to tell this, like, people don't want to look like me. You know, people don't want to be 240 pounds at 5'9" and, you know, and look this way. And I get that. And that's okay, because I don't tell people to look like me. And I don't, and I'm sure Jay Cutler doesn't tell people to get big like him or Kai or Phil or, you know, Brandon or those guys. If you're going to be a bodybuilder, you do it for yourself. I guarantee if you ask, oh, by the way, I saw Victor Martinez on your interview with him. Man, he looks great. I can't wait to see. He's always been one of my favorites, man. And I used to train with him back in the, you know, days of steel over on 23rd Street with Victor Nunez and John De La Rosa and Busta Rhymes and that. But if you talk to these guys, they're going to tell you, like, they're never going to, you know, be like, I did this because I wanted to please. Like, bodybuilders do it for themselves, whether it's, you know, they got into bodybuilding because they had, you know, self-esteem issues or some type of darkness or some type of life experience that caused them to kind of use the gym as therapy and to just transition into this career and passion. I guarantee it's going to be most of the time something like that. But they're never going to say, oh, you know, I did this because, you know, I wanted to, you know, please somebody. It's always for themselves. Or because, you know, in the sense of me, I picked up an Arnold Encyclopedia, got a taste of it, saw the expo, and I was like, you know what, this is something I want to do. And I'm competitive by nature, and, you know, the gym is always a competition versus yourself.
You mentioned the drug protocol, right? A couple of years ago, maybe it was a year ago.
I always get people like, when are you going to talk about steroids? You know what's the best? You know what's the best? Let me tell you. People are like, how can you say you're natty? And I'm like, I will pay you $10,000 if you go anywhere in the history of Joey Swole and find a page or somewhere I said I'm natural. I've never said that in my life. Not once, but go ahead.
Arnold made a comment that he believes that bodybuilding should be tested for steroids going forward. On a record, he said that at one of the expos. You mentioned the drug protocol, right? Do you think testing for steroids and eliminating it from the sport would maybe help it become mainstream?
No, not at all. You have natural bodybuilding. Nobody knows who they are. nothing against those guys. They train hard. But if you want to be a natural bodybuilder, I mean, just look at the purses. Look at what do you win if you become a pro natural bodybuilder versus what you become, and what's the purse up to now for being Mr. Olympia? $500,000, $1 million? You know, not to mention now they have The Rock doing his own show where the person can be even higher, right? No, absolutely not. But I think, again, you know, I'll tell you a story. When my mom first found out that I took stuff, I took my phone out, and there was a documentary called Bigger, Faster, Stronger by Chris Bell. You know Chris Bell? Great documentary. Very educational, very, you know, very good stuff. And I'm like, Mom, just watch. So I gave my mom the phone. She took it, and she broke it. She threw it against the wall. Most people don't want to understand what goes into that lifestyle and what it goes into, obviously, drug protocol. Me personally, I tell kids, I say, or not kids, but I tell people, I say, listen, if you're going to become a professional bodybuilder and that's something you want to do, nobody can tell you what to do with your life. My advice is do your homework. I did probably at least 3 or 4 years of research before I even touched anything. I talked to my doctor, who I'm still close with, and I still talk to my doctor. I was open with him. I talked to a bunch of professionals. I learned the science behind it. Until this day, I still learn more. I still have some of the most intelligent people in the industry that I, you know, that I connect with to learn more and to obviously be safe. I've never had any problems. I've never had any side effects. Got my heart checked. I tore my tricep 2 years ago, which I still need to get fixed. And I had to get a heart. I had to get my heart checked in order to have surgery. Doctor's like, you have the heart of a 20-year-old. You're great, kid. You're perfectly fine. So, anything in moderation, I think is okay. I mean, you can overdose on things like vitamin C, and this goes back into the documentary. You know, you're gonna have somebody that's out there eating McDonald's five times a day that's gonna, you know, probably die at 50 years old from diabetes or cardiovascular disease, telling me, hey kid, you know, it's unhealthy for you to do that. It's like, who the f*** are you? You're telling me, first off, it's my life, I'm gonna do what I want. If I wanna go out and fucking, you know, and do every f***ing drug there is and go f***ing, you know, run down the street naked, I'm gonna do it because it's my life and nobody can tell me how to live my f***ing life. But at the same time, you should just be intelligent, be smart. There's, again, it's 2020. There's so much literature out there. There's so many resources. There's so much knowledge available to you to become informed, right? Informed. Very easy. Learn your stuff. Be patient. That's the other problem is you have a lot of people that are trying to push on the kids at 19 years old that they need to take drugs. No, man. You know, learn to love the sport, you know. Eat your frickin' peanut butter and jelly and your chicken and your steak and wait till you're at a point where you want to compete later in life to even think about wanting to do that. I've had a number of kids in their early 20s, late teens, hey man, I want to take this. I'm like, no man, don't. Why? Do you want to become Mr. Olympia? Are you at that point? No man, take your time, do things right. First build a base and then later in life, if it's something you want to do, you know, do your homework and figure out if it's what's right for you. But I'll never push it on people. I'll never tell people they have to. But if, going back to your question, I'm way off. No, I don't think it should be tested. No, absolutely not. I mean, how?
Do you think other sports should test? Like other mainstream sports should be?
No.
Like, should we just drop testing altogether?
No, I think, listen, George Carlin, comedian? He said, I don't remember verbatim, but he said, you know, they make the baseball, for example, they make the mitts better every year, the bats, they use science to make everything better. Why not fucking let the players scientifically make themselves better? You know, it's they're gladiators, man. Like, you look at football players, right? Here's an example, right? If I'm playing in the NFL and I go and I tear my knee up, I'm 25 years old, right? I tear my knee up, tear my ligaments, my knee, and I go and I get surgery, and there's a doctor that tells me, hey, if you take growth hormone, you're gonna heal better, faster, and you'll be able to walk when you're done playing football. But these people over at the NFL that make the rules tell me I can't take that. I'm gonna take it. I wanna walk and play with my kids after the age of, you know, 35 when I retire, whatever age that is. Again, I think it's misguided. I think people don't understand the benefits of certain things, even from a medical perspective, of what, you know, certain drugs that we have can do for players. I mean, dude, you're literally out there putting your body and your life on the line. And if you're going to tell me that I can't take a drug that's going to help me recover or, you know, have a life after football, I don't think you have a right to say that. It's my quality of life, you know. And then in a sense of, I mean, you look at guys like Barry Bonds, right? Everyone always puts that asterisk next to his name. Always. Let's say you hit a 100-mile-per-hour fastball like he did. I don't care how many drugs you take. You have to hit a ball, a round ball with a round bat. So, again, man, I don't take anything away from those guys. And I mean, I remember reading a statistic that, you know, back in the 90s in the NFL, it was something like 75% of players were taking something. 75%. Maybe it was all sports. So we're just going to say, okay, pre-1998, asterisk to every fucking record set or every player that played, right? Or you're going to go back and, you know, create a time machine to go back and test them? Like, no, man. You know, obviously, I understand why they have rules and, you know, regulations from a sense, but I think when it comes to injuries and stuff like that, as far as, you know, red blood cells, you know, certain types of treatments, growth hormone, you know, the benefits of certain anabolic agents and you know, drugs they have today, I think players should absolutely be allowed to take them to heal themselves.
I think that movie you mentioned, Bigger, Stronger, Faster, that was the tagline was, is it cheating when everybody's doing it, right? It was like, it seems like today in sports.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember, and I was like junior in high school, so senior in high school, and I remember I was in health class, and I remember there was, and this is before I knew anything about steroids or anything, and I remember there was a a video we watched on it, and had guys like Lyle Alzado and stuff like that. I talked about, he was such a, you know, against it because he said it causes cancer, which I don't know. I don't know the details on it, but it said if you could take a drug and become one of the greatest in your sport and make a lot of money, but die at 60 years old, as opposed to not take the drug, be mediocre, make a decent living, and die at 80 years old, which would you choose? I mean, now, most people in front of the public eye are going to say, oh, man, I want to live to 80. It's like, no, most people are going to in the back of their mind saying, man, that feeling of being the greatest, you know. But the other thing is this, too, and I think the misconception is this when it comes to bodybuilders especially. There's thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people that take steroids. And the majority of them look like shit.
Why is that?
Because it's not just drugs. Most people think you just take a drug and you look good. Do you see how Phil Heath trains? Do you see how Kai Greene trains? Do you see how Brandon Curry trains? Do you see me in the gym? Do you see these top guys, you know, that have great physiques at the top level of bodybuilding, how they train? You have to work harder when you take stuff. It's not a magic fucking pill. You don't just put something in your body and say, okay, how come I'm not growing? You know, it's you gotta eat more. You gotta train harder. And in order to make those benefits, you know, worth it. As opposed to, like I said, I've seen guys that take so much stuff, and the rule of thumb is always less is more, but they take so much stuff and they look terrible. And it's like, listen, man, you don't know what you're doing. You didn't research, or they're taking the right combination. Like it kills me when I have kids come up to me and say, hey, I'm taking this, this, and this. Especially, first off, you don't just approach a stranger and say that. Second off, do you know what that, and that is? Tell me what it does, right? What's the half-life? What are you supposed to do after you're done? How do you know it's right? How do you know it's safe? Like, what's the dose? No idea. They just like, you know what? Someone told me to take it, so I did it. It's like, why the fuck? I won't even put a food in my body without having, you know, knowing like my girlfriend, like if it ain't grass-fed, grass-finished, it doesn't come in the house, right? So why would you put something in your body that you don't know what the fuck it is? Are you crazy? Like, come on, man, protect yourself. Be smarter than that.
Absolutely. Now one more bodybuilding question. So Brandon Curry became, you know, Mr. Olympia last year.
Is this the, I think I know where this is going.
You're an enthusiast of sport, so
love
basically.
Sport, love bodybuilding.
Dorian Yates made a comment saying that in his day and age, Brandon wouldn't even place top six. That Ronnie Coleman basically said the same thing. They basically saying that the quality of bodybuilders went down since the 80s and 90s, I guess. Since the 90s, so they both competed in the 90s and 2000s. Do you agree or disagree?
I will say this. I was really excited to see what Dallas McCarver could have done. It was such a tragedy to lose him, but I was so excited because I thought he was going to be, I really thought he was going to be that next generation like that. And he would have been. Like, that guy was an absolute phenom. And I think he had, you know, Olympia in his future. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to see, you know, what his potential would have been. I was a big fan of him, man, and knew him, and he was such a great guy. I've known Brandon a long time.
He's a great guy.
His physique is unbelievable. If you see those pictures he took overseas when he was getting ready to compete, wow. I mean, the guy just looked amazing. If you want to argue that there was less talent on stage at Olympia this past year, it's a fact. You didn't have Sean. You didn't have Phil. You know, guys like Kai, you know, weren't up there. So was it a little less as far as competition? Yeah, absolutely. Do I think that took away from Brandon? No, I thought Brandon looked great. I think he deserved it. He's a great guy. He's a great ambassador for the sport. I think he looked phenomenal. I think this is the sense of, I mean, who's the greatest of all time, LeBron or Michael, right? I'm particular to Chicago. I'm from Chicago. I'm going to say Michael. Ronnie is particular to his time. He's going to say, my time was the best. Dorian's going to say his was the best, his era. Arnold's going to probably come out and say, you know what? Back when we were around and we had, you know, less of a bubble gut and we were, you know, more aesthetic and it was more, we were the best, right? So I think it's just going to go by era, right? I mean, everyone's going to be, you know, it's going to be biased towards their own, you know, time in the sport. With that being said, Dorian was one of the greatest of all time. Ronnie, one of the best of all time. Those guys were unbelievable, along with the guys that they competed against. I don't look at it as in a sense of, you know, let's compare Brandon to the guys from the 90s or the 80s. Brandon's Mr. Olympia today, period. Just like those people that want to complain about Donald Trump being the president today. He's your president, period. Donald Trump is your president. Brandon Curry is your Mr. Olympia. Deal with it and get past it.
What do you think the fitness industry is heading in the future? What do you think the whole, you know, social media, the whole expo, what do you think is heading in the future? And
What kind of mark do you want to leave on this fitness industry, Dan?
Wow, man, good question. Where do I think it's heading? I mean, it's becoming, fitness is becoming a movement. I mean, you see the sport, you know, going places overseas. Like you see, I know a lot of international expos are becoming very big, which is great. You know, things are becoming mainstream, you know, from here to India to Australia to, you know, Asia. I mean, there's great shows going on over in the Philippines and, you know, all over the market in Asia, and it's great. Like I said, the globalization of the sport, of fitness, of the business side of the industry as well. I just see it continuing to grow. I see it becoming obviously more saturated with more and more athletes. I unfortunately see it obviously starting to die down a little bit as far as the business aspect. And you already see it. Like I said, to start a supplement company today versus 10 years ago is so much harder. To become successful in e-commerce or through social media marketing is so much harder today than it was, you know, 5, 6, 10 years ago. Simply become changes. I see innovation. I see new platforms coming up. You know, everyone's talking about TikTok today, and there's going to be, you know, something new in 2 more years. And, you know, so things are obviously going to have their peak and fall and peak and fall and peak and fall as far as social media. I think you just need to stay relevant, you know, work hard, stay up to date on different platforms in order to stay relevant. As far as what I want to leave, very simple, man. I want people to look at me and, you know, find something they can relate to better themselves, whether it's having a bigger heart, having a better work ethic, something more than just the physique. I have a bigger physique, and, you know, some people would say I have an impressive physique. I'm not trying to be cocky or arrogant. I think I work really hard. But I want people to take more than just, you know, looking at me and thinking, you know, that guy has muscles. I want people to understand that, you know, the best, biggest muscle you should have is your heart. The best thing you should work on every day is bettering yourself some way, whether it's physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, whatever that may be. And to also realize this sport is a brotherhood. It's a brother-sisterhood. You know, there's so much hate. There's so much drama. I can't stand to see people try and tear others down. You know, fortunately for me, I came up not only from my family and, you know, from my teammates, stuff like that, but the first gym I ever trained in was, it was a powerhouse turned into an export in Chicago. And I remember I was 19 years old and I got a gym membership over the summer. My cousins were training there. I walked in this gym. It was in a bad neighborhood in Chicago, real bad neighborhood off Elston and Lawrence. A lot of people, you guys from Chicago, know what gym I'm talking about. Great gym though. And I walked in, probably one of the only white kids in there. A lot of tough, you know, some hardcore Polish, you know, some, you know, black, Mexican, Puerto Rican, you know, tough, tough guys, very intimidating, big dudes. And within a week, they were all like my brothers, man. They all took me under their wings, and my buddy Armando, my buddy Kenny, you know, I mean, these guys, these were guys that, you know, you look at them at first, like, man, those guys look like killers. But they were teddy bears. They were big, you know, they were like my big brothers. And to me, that really kind of gave me that impression of, man, this sport really is more than just lifting weights. And I try and tell people, you know, as much as you focus on your journey as far as getting bigger and, you know, doing this to have, you know, a better physique, focus on the relationships you create, right? Like I go back to Chicago and I haven't been there in a year or so, and I haven't been back to that gym. I'll walk into that gym and see some of the old faces I haven't seen. And it's like, oh, Joey, man, how you doing, man? I've been seeing what you're doing. I'm so happy for you. Or I'll get messages, or I'll still talk to guys I was, you know, at 19 years old over, you know, 15 years ago that I started training with that are still till today, you know, checking up on me and seeing how things are going. So it's just bodybuilding and fitness, it's a great metaphor for life, and there's so many benefits to it, and it's so much bigger than just the, you know, the actual weightlifting aspect of it. And I would love to just kind of, you know, leave that message with people, and obviously through social media, the one thing I really try to tell people through social media is you don't get caught up, you know, with this idea of self-love being equal to likes and followers and things like that. You know, I think the one thing that we fail to do as society is teach people how to love themselves. You know, everybody gets, like you were talking about earlier, caught up in the likes and the followers and that affirmation from that stuff. And I mean, think about it. Why do we have hate? Why do we have racism? Why do we have, you know, any of the phobias we have in society? It's because people, it's like, if you're a different color than me and I hate you, it's not because I really hate you, it's because I don't love myself. And that's the truth, if you think about it. And I try to tell people this. If you teach somebody to love themselves, if you ever find somebody that's truly happy and loves themselves, they're not going to ever spread hate or negativity towards somebody else, ever. And again, that goes back to when I see people online. you want to hate on me or say something negative, I'm going to go around the back door. Hey, man, what's up with you? Like, why would you say that to a stranger? Like, are you okay? Like, talk to me. And 99 times out of 100, that person will message me back. Man, hey, you're right. I'm sorry. I really like your stuff. I'm having a bad day. My girl broke up with me. You know, I'm just in a bad mood. Whatever case might be. And I'm like, listen, man, it's totally cool. That happens. We've all been there. Relax. Think. You know, keep your head up. So in a sense, I think I just want to teach people how to love them. Just realize you don't need to have a million followers. You don't need to be somebody that gets X amount of likes or have this sponsorship or, you know, this type of success. You know, you're good enough. You are the same as me. I'm no better than you as you are better than me. That stuff don't matter. You know, learn to love yourself. And once you do that, man, you know, and you can spread that to other people, you know, you can do great things like change the world, man. And as cliche and as redundant as that sounds, I mean, again, social media is a great tool. And for those out there that have a large following, I try and tell them, man, for you to have followers on social media, it's a responsibility. It's a privilege. It's a blessing, but it's a responsibility for you to use that in a way to change the world, to better the world, to better people, one person at a time if you have to.
Visit GenerationIron.com for even more GI exclusive content on all things bodybuilding, fitness, combat, and strength sports. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to this show on Apple Podcasts or wherever podcasts are downloaded.
Your body is an ultimate high-performance machine, and Performance Lab Protein is the ultimate high-grade muscle fuel. This revolutionary plant-based formula has conquered the purity and taste issues that you get with most protein powders, and is clinically shown to be at least as effective as whey for increasing lean muscle mass. But again, don't take our word for it. Try it for 30 days, and if you're not blown away with a difference, you'll get your money back. Go to performancelab.com, use discount code GENIRON10 to get 10% off. That's performancelab.com, discount code GENIRON10. And number 10.